Blog Talk Radio.
Another Wednesday edition of the Fight Network. I'm Don Henderson. We've got a great sports show for you this evening. Our normal guests are in line. Roy Cummings is in Tampa, Florida. And what a story we have from down in Tampa, Florida in the National Hockey League. As always, Frank Carroll is at the controls, our captain, our executive of the program, and Roger Hendler is in Atlanta. So before we get to Tampa, Florida and Roy Cummings, let's go to our executive producer, Frank Carroll, and what we got on the docket, Frank.
Well, Don, tonight we're going to dedicate this show to two gentlemen whose lives crossed their paths and my path many, many times. Both of them served. One served in the United States Air Force, was a fighter pilot in Vietnam. The other one was a commander in the Navy, but also in Vietnam. Unfortunately, both have been affected by Agent Orange and now have Parkinson's. But between their military career and today, they served for 37 years with the Sarasota Sheriff's Office as majors. And that would be Daryl Stinger, who's a colonel in the United States Armed Forces, Air Force, as well as a major in the Sarasota Sheriff's Office, ran the criminal division for many years and then went over to court services. And then there was Bill Fleeman, Major Bill Fleeman. Bill was a commander in the Navy, served very well when he served his country. He served the Sheriff's Department at 34 years in Sarasota County. Bill retired as commander of the patrol division. And unfortunately, both these guys are wheelchair bound now. We send our very best wishes out to them. A very big thank you for everything you did for this country, and especially for those who forgot to vote yesterday. You fought very hard to let them do that. Some people just forget about it.
Thank you very much, Amen. Frank. And before any delay, let's get down to Tampa, Florida, and Roy Cummings, who covered the Lightning from day one when they first got into the National Hockey League. But I don't think he's ever seen a 382nd period like we saw in the last game of the playoffs, just a little bit better than 6 minutes. The people in Sarasota and Tampa and the whole west coast of Florida, Roy, are not going to forget those 382nds.
No, can't imagine they will. And but the Lightning need to. They need to get that out of their minds in a hurry. Well, they've still got another 24 hours to do it. But they got to put it behind them and move forward and start playing a little bit better hockey overall. Maybe get a little bit better goaltending as well, because they are on the brink of, obviously, of being eliminated by the Leafs. And it would be an historical elimination. I mean, it's been 20 years since the Leafs have won a first-round playoff series. Longer than that, obviously, since they won a Stanley Cup. So anything the Leafs do in a positive manner is going to be historic, and I don't know if you want to be on the other end of that history. So we'll see how it goes. But and you know what? I'll say this. I said the Lightning need to play better hockey. They do. They just need to be a little bit smarter. I mean, you know, they took a couple of bad penalties. They've taken some bad penalties here in this series. That's one thing that's really not, you know, kind of their like them. That's a little bit, you know, different than what they usually play. They're usually a little smarter than that. That's number one. Number two, the goaltending has just been ordinary. And very seldom do you use that word when talking about Andrei Vasilevskiy. So they need to get a little bit better goaltending. A little bit smarter defensively in their own end, obviously, and it goes for the forwards in particular. The defense has been a little bit shaky, but more than anything, it's been bad turnovers by forwards, Nikita Kucherov primarily, that has really hurt them. So they got to play smarter. They got to get better goaltending, and I think they can do it. I won't be surprised at all if this series comes back to Tampa for Game 6. You know, I'll be surprised. I'll be a little bit surprised now if the Lightning can hold on and win. But you know what? Momentum is a big thing. And if they can somehow, you know, it starts by winning the first period tomorrow night. And if they can win the first period, well, maybe they can win the game. If they can win the game, they can, you know, they can get things going in their direction and get the momentum going and get that back. And if they can get that back, you know, we saw that the Maple Leafs, I think they're fragile. But they're also very, very powerful and very very dangerous.
Well, I think two things, Roy, that maybe you'd comment before we go to Roger down in Lynn, and that is that, you know, the Lightning won game one convincingly. They had game two pretty much in their pocket until the last minute. They gave up the tying goal and then lost it in overtime up at Toronto. Then, of course, they were ahead 4-1 as we're talking about this final 6 minutes plus. They're ahead 4-1, you know, with – less than 10 minutes to go in the game, and they blow that one and then lose it in overtime. So it's been a very, very unusual total series for the way Coop and the Lightning normally play.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, as you said, you know, the momentum, as I said, really, momentum is so important. And I think what happened in the last game was it just, you know, the momentum shifted, and it shifted in a hurry. And the Maple Leafs rode that wave, and the Lightning just couldn't stop it. Again, you know, sometimes you just need your goaltender to come up with a big goal, or you need a big, you know, a big goal yourself. They didn't get those big plays. And here's one of the other issues. Their best players are not all their best players right now. You know, I think Hedman has been fine. I think Kucherov has played poorly in a lot of cases, particularly in his own end. You know, Braden Point is doing what he can do. But I think you could see a little bit more out of Steven Stamkos. You know, he seems to have lost the range with that one-timer, which is, you know, his critical shot. I mean, that's his bread and butter. That's his lethal weapon, and it is a lethal weapon, but it's no good if you can't put it on net. And, you know, people know it's coming, but it's usually so good that it doesn't matter. But lately he's been missing with it, and he can't miss with it. And part of that is the defensive style. I mean, let's face it, there's, you know, the Maple Leafs are being aggressive, and they need to be. And that's a big part of it too. So, look, I'm not counting the Lightning out. I think that's a big mistake. They're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to prove to me that they can't win this series before I'll count them out. So I still think they've got at least another win in them in this series, and it obviously needs to come tomorrow night.
Roger Handler to Atlanta, go to it.
Well, I'll tell you, Roy, so I've watched some really great games, and we've talked about it in the past, the Stanley Cup playoffs, probably the best in sports as far as excitement, competition. And like you were, when Don were talking about late and long long game action and scoring. But I was watching the Rangers and the Devils a couple of nights. You know, they were playing, you know, back-to-back games, but not, you know, with a game or a day in between. And there were some really great games at both the Garden and also in Newark. And once again, I think the Stanley Cup, you never know. I mean, who would have thought that this would happen to the Lightning? And but stranger things have happened in the past than in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah, it's a very unpredictable, you know, playoff. It's again, it is unlike any other because they play seven games from the start because the teams really are so close because it's a completely different style of hockey. And really what it is to test, you know, did you build your team properly? And, you know, we know that the Lightning have from the past. Obviously, if you go to three straight finals in a row, you're doing something right. The Leafs have been a little bit different, but they figured some things out, clearly. Picked up some players that that make a difference. I mean, you see guys like, you know, they're not household names, but guys like Noel Achiari for the Maple Leafs. I mean, that's a guy who plays the style of hockey that wins you Stanley Cups and wins you playoff series and keeps you alive in the playoffs. You put him out there with guys like Ryan O'Reilly and, you know, and you see what the difference is. You get a little grit, and all of a sudden everybody gets a little bit more brave. Everybody feels a little bit more confident about whatever their assignment might be. You know, players like, you know, Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews feel a little bit better about themselves out there. They feel a little bit more protected. And that protection leads to confidence. That confidence leads to success, and success leads to winning a series, and that's where the Leafs are. But you're right. You know, the playoffs have been really good so far. Wouldn't say they've been exceptional, but they've been really good. And, you know, there's more great hockey to come, and that's the best part about it. You know, as Tommy used to love this time of year, we all do, and they reward us every year in the NHL. There's no doubt about it. You know, you don't have to have a whole lot of – and last night, I mean, you know, it was funny last night, guys. I don't know if you caught this. Two goals were scored off people's faces last night. Now, one was kind of an own goal. It was a defensive player for the Islanders who had a puck go off his cheek. But then one was actually scored, you know, for a team off someone's face. So I don't think I've ever seen that before. It's seldom you ever see anybody, you know. But you know what? That's the price people are willing to pay in the Stanley Cup playoffs, because, you know, guys are willing to put their face in front of a puck, you know, this was, you know, to score a goal sometimes. And it happened twice last night. So the NHL, come playoff time, never disappoints.
Well, fellas, we got the NFL draft tomorrow. We're going to talk to Billy Warndale of Our Lads, and, of course, been around the dial, a great sports broadcaster in Philadelphia. He's coming up in the next half hour to talk about the draft. But, Roy, you again with the Bucks from when they first started out. Todd Bowles said White, who was very much a speculation of whether he was going to be traded or what he was going to do. He did. He was assigned a contract for this year, so they have the option of doing whatever they want there. But Todd Bowles said today that he was definitely not going to be traded tomorrow. So your thought or two about where the Bucks stand going into tomorrow afternoon?
I'll tell you what, the Bucks have become one of the more intriguing teams in this draft. First of all, to me, they're always intriguing because they're always ready to move. They're positioned at number 19 right now. My guess is they won't stay there, but they might, you know, based on the possibility that what they're looking for may come right to them at number 19. When you're sitting at 19, you kind of got to wait for the draft to kind of unfold. Unless there's somebody out there that you really think you want, you pretty much have to sit there and let it happen and let it come to you. But, you know, Jason Light has always been very aggressive. He's not afraid to move up, certainly not afraid to move down in the first round and move around in the other rounds. And so we'll see what happens tomorrow night. But, you know, there's a lot of intrigue around the Buccaneers because there's this thought that they could possibly draft a quarterback. You know, it could be Will Levis out of Kentucky. It could be Anthony Richardson out of Florida. You know, they could, if they feel it, I don't think they do personally. I still think that the Buccaneers are going to try to shore up one of their front lines, be it the defensive line with an edge rusher or the offensive line with a tackle or someone who can split between tackle and guard, somebody they can move around. You know, I still think that's the likely scenario. You know, at the end of the day, you know, the Bucs are not afraid to take chances, so we'll see where it goes. But they're an intriguing team. And you know what? Your Eagles have become intriguing, too, because there's a lot of talk that they may take a run at what was once the top player in this draft, the kid out of Georgia, who's obviously fallen out of favor with some teams. But there's some talk that the Eagles may try to move into position to take the edge rusher out of Georgia. So we'll see what happens.
And also, I'm not a better, but big stories in the Post today about Levis's family saying that he's been assured the Panthers are going to take him number one, which is a little bit of a surprise. Everybody thought they were going to take Young. We obviously don't know anything, but the odds all of a sudden in Vegas and every place else have dropped dramatically. I think he started off at like 300-1 and where he is now. Roger, you're in Atlanta, and of course that's intriguing as well because they need a couple of pieces.
Yeah, and there a lot of speculation about taking a running back, and it doesn't make sense because they're loaded with running backs. Talking about the Panthers, I listened to Mike Lombardi today with Chris Russo, and I found that interesting about the assessment of the Panthers that they could be the strongest team in the NFC South. To me, it's surprising, but when you think about it and you analyze this, he's probably right. You know, I don't see the Falcons really making a big improvement in the season. I may be wrong. Obviously, we know the situation with the Bucs, and I think New Orleans is probably a little uncertain. What do you think about that in the NFC South, Roy?
Yeah, I think, look, sitting at number eight, I think the Falcons are a real interesting team, too. They need a quarterback. There should be one available to them. I got to think that someone is going to fall to them. Again, it may not be the one they want, but, you know, do you pass on an Anthony Richardson if he's sitting there for you at number eight? Do you pass on a Will Levis if he's sitting there for you at number eight? I mean, what do you do? Do you take C.J. Stroud if he suddenly falls, if Levis does go number one overall? You know, the quarterbacks are always so overrated, but for a team like Atlanta, you know, to me, I think it makes sense where they're at in number eight. You know, I don't think it's a bad idea necessarily to take a quarterback if somebody falls to you. But, you know, the other thing that you could do is just admit that, hey, we're not ready to make that leap yet. You got to know what's coming down the pike, what's coming down next year in the draft. And that's one of the real that's one of the things that most draft fans completely forget is the general managers, you know, have a board of what's coming next year. They know what's out there, and they've got a pretty good read on those players now. You know, it's not as great a read, obviously, as they have on these guys, but you know, they know if there's going to be a quarterback available next year or two or three, and they know if there's some guys out there that could suddenly, you know, change their organization around. So they, you know, they base their decision sometimes on that as well. And in that case, again, the Falcons become intriguing because, you know, it may seem boring, but if you end up taking somebody like, you know, Peter Skoronski out of Northwestern, just an offensive lineman who can play every position, well how does
yeah.
that hurt you? You know, I mean, that doesn't hurt you at all. You know, if you end up taking a defensive end, you know, Lucas Van Ness or Nolan Smith, somebody like that, you know, take an edge rusher, how does that hurt you? It doesn't, because you have to build the other parts of the team too. But just the situation that they're in, a team that needs a quarterback, and with the way the quarterbacks are always overrated, and with four of them at least projected to go in the first round, you just wonder if the Falcons will decide, you know, hey, that's for us. We're in the market this time around. So, you know, as always, plenty of intrigue around the draft. It never disappoints in that regard.
Well, all they talk about is
Young
had a great year, but all they talk about is his size and his ability, and we'll have to wait and see what happens there, of course, tomorrow with the draft, because it was pretty much hands down that he was going to be the first quarterback drafted. But, hey, there are five quarterbacks that they're talking about that are almost moving around front and back, up and down, and so forth. I'll tell you, for me, I like that kid from TCU. Nobody else likes him, but he's going to go probably in the second or third round. But I'll tell you, if I were general manager, I'd pick him somewhere along the line. Roger, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say next year's class has a really good group of quarterback prospects. And it was just funny today listening to Mike. All of a sudden, I fast forward, 4 or 5 years, assuming that he doesn't get hurt, that they have a lot of success, Don, at your alma mater, the University of Texas. I was thinking about Arch Manning, okay, and
right.
Cooper's son, who is the number one quarterback prospect going into college this year. And you just wonder how he will perform in college, assuming, like I said, that he doesn't get hurt. But that would be interesting, you know, if I'm around in 5 years to see that draft.
Well, the other thing is the kid out of Texas, everybody seems to want is a running back. Whether or not, you know, he's going to go as highly rated as everybody in the papers is saying, I don't know. He's like, heck of a player. Roy?
Yeah, he is, and I've seen a couple of mock drafts. Of course, everybody's got their own ideas. You know, everybody's trying to be different, really. But I'd say, look, I've seen a couple that say the Eagles would go for him. And you know what? I wouldn't argue with that. If I'm the Eagles and I'm sitting at number 10 and you take the running back, I don't have a problem with it. Because to me, that's something that kind of finishes off your team. You've got the quarterback. You feel pretty good about your offensive line as it is. You're very strong defensively as it is. You know, what do you really need? Well, what they need is a running back. So, you know, it to some people it doesn't make sense taking a running back 10th overall, but you know what? Usually when a running back's taken that high, there's a reason behind it. They usually give you 4 or 5 really, really good years, and it's working. It's worth it. I mean, take a look at Saquon Barkley. I mean, let's face it. Would anybody, you know, deny having that guy on their team right now? They wouldn't. I don't know that Bijan Robinson is in that category, but, you know, he's going to have a chance to prove it because I think somebody's going to take him high. And, you know, one of the other things talking about not only the, you know, obviously the Falcons, the Eagles, Tampa Bay, all these teams that are really, you know, one, there's a real benefit to the fact that every year quarterbacks are overrated. And there's a real benefit, potential benefit at least, to the possibility that 3 or 4 of these quarterbacks this year go in the first, you know, 6, 8, 9, 10 picks.
Right.
Every time a quarterback's taken, it pushes somebody else down a spot or two that maybe
wasn't expected.
So, you know, the Falcons could be the first team to really benefit from that. You know, does a Tyree Wilson fall to them? You know, the kid out of Texas Tech, the edge rusher out of Texas Tech. You know, does something happen that Tampa now ends up with the second or third best offensive tackle instead of the fourth or fifth? You know, these are all things that can happen as a result of quarterbacks being taken too soon. And it's oftentimes, guys, and we all know this, The teams that take the quarterback and gamble and roll the dice, it's oftentimes they end up, missing out. And the benefactors are the people down lower in the draft who just, you know, sat tight, waited for the draft to come to them and decided, okay, you didn't think this guy was worth your pick at number 12? We're going to take him. You didn't think this guy was worth it at number 6? We're going to take him at number 8. That's how drafts are won, guys. You sit back. You let things happen. You see how it's unfolding, and you jump on your opportunity when it's presented to you. So, again, it's all it's all a matter of what kind of work you put in, and you know every team's doing it. So, we'll see how it all shakes out. It's gonna be fun.
Roy, thank you very much for your analysis the first half hour. As always, we'll get together again next week, and we'll kick it all around again, and see who the winners were and who the losers were. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Roy,
guys.
Appreciate it.
Have a great week.
Well, our man that's been all around the country this last week, Billy Wernendael, an outstanding sportscaster in Philadelphia for so many years. But Billy has been on The Fan on Sunday night. He's been on WIP in Philadelphia. He's been in New York. He's been in Philadelphia. He's been on Our Lad's Guide since day one. Billy Wernendael, we're talking about the draft, as you expect. Give me an idea where, first of all, the Eagles are going to go.
Well, I think they're going to attempt to move up to try to get Jalen Carter, the outstanding defensive lineman from Georgia. It will be costly, but they feel as though they want unique players. And if they can make that trade for Jalen Carter, because they have a lot of age on the defensive line with Brandon Graham and Fletcher Cox, I think Howie wants to move up and take a player of that magnitude. Now, remember, Jalen Carter was in for a visit for the Eagles, and they obviously grilled him on every issue that he confronted, especially with the accident and the drag racing and, of course, being out of shape for his pro day. So I think if all those answers were yes, 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 and he convinced the Eagles that he is a guy that's on the straight and narrow, I think the Eagles will do everything in their power to move up and get Jalen Carter, a difference maker on the defensive line.
Well, Roger, you're up next, and Howie hadn't made too many mistakes with the Eagles over the last couple of years, so go to it.
No, but as Don was saying, Bill, I went to sleep on Saturday night with you and Ricky Ricardo on The Fan in New York. I went to sleep Sunday night with you and Ricky Ricardo on WIP, and it was great radio. But,
let me ask you a question, Roger. Do you have any nightmares that night?
No, I wanted a replay. But no, getting back to Carter, the other thing is that really does concern me was that he was totally unprepared for his interview at the Combine, from what I understand. And you know more about it than me. And
he was being subpoenaed by the Georgia the Athens Police Department. And obviously that was weighing on his mind at that time. And I believe he left the Combine to get back to Georgia and discuss it with the police.
I was just going to say, didn't he say that at the very beginning that, he was under that pressure with the police were still controlling what he could say and what he couldn't say, and he didn't want to get involved in a press conference at the at that particular time. I think that's the way he addressed it, wasn't it, Billy?
Yeah, I think you're right, Don. I think you're right. And that's why a number of teams now, of course, he told his agent, I only want to visit with teams who have a top 10 pick. And that was Drew Rosenhaus dictating where Jalen Carter was going to go.
Yeah, well, that's Drew Rosenhaus. Yeah, I mean, we've dealt with him over many years. And, but the other thing, he is a special player, okay. But then there were we're talking about Robinson from Texas, Don's alma mater, and there was some talk about that the Eagles may go for him, and then Mike Lombardi said today with the Mad Dog Chris Russo, he said that he's just so much more than just a running back, and hey, with all the
he's right about that, if you look at Bijan Robinson, he's an excellent running back. He's a very good pass catcher. And the other thing that stands out He's an excellent blocker. So many running backs do not like to block, but he will stick his nose in there, and you like that. And if you look, if the Eagles drafted Bijan Robinson, all right, look at the weapons. You have Jalen Hurts, you have A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, all right, Dallas Goedert, and Bijan Robinson. That's a pretty good arsenal of offensive weapons.
Absolutely.
Billy, the one thing we look at from a division standpoint, everybody was so close last year, even Washington, as it turned out, almost made the playoffs. The balance, the tipping balance is not very bright. If you make the right move, you're going to make a strong move within the division.
Well, Don, I look at not only the division, but the conference. Other than Jalen Hurts, give me a prime-time quarterback in the conference right now. Is there one?
Zero.
Dak Prescott? Aaron Rodgers is going to the Jets. Is there one prime-time quarterback other than Hurts in the conference?
No.
They have more quarterbacks in the NFC East than they have in all of the – you look at – the only team that doesn't have a quarterback of name is you know, the Patriots. Unbelievably, they're the ones don't have a named quarterback.
Well, you have Sam Howell, the starting quarterback with Washington. I mean, Desmond Ridder, the starting quarterback with the Atlanta Falcons. A lot of these guys could be in a lineup, and you wouldn't recognize who they are.
Exactly. Roger?
Well, that's exactly right. And I mentioned earlier, Bill, that when you look at the NFC South, the best team at the end of the season could be the Panthers. I mean, you know, with what they have and what they can get in the draft. We talked about it with Roy for a little bit. Do you think that Howie will give up a lot to go earlier in the draft rather than 10, higher than 10?
Well, I remember, next year he has, I believe, 4 compensatory picks. He has, I believe, 11 picks going in the draft next year. So he could use the draft capital from next year, and he only has 6 picks this year. But Howie's always been a guy that liked to draft in the 4th, 5th, and 6th round, and he has no picks there. So he has to be very careful that he doesn't mortgage the future. So I think he has enough to move up from, say, 10 to 3. If he gives up, all right, you'll have to give up maybe your 10th pick and maybe your 31st pick to move up in that top 6 or 7 picks. Because I think if Seattle has the opportunity to get Carter, they will jump on him. And I think that he's going to be on the phone with Arizona a lot because Arizona wants to move out.
Billy, give me your observation, Billy, on Brett Favre and Rodgers. I mean, the Jets made a big move to get Brett Favre years ago because he was going to turn the corner and make the Jets a big-time team again. You know, you're talking about guys 39 years old. I mean, I'm not saying Rodgers hadn't been a great quarterback, but he's 39 years old. I mean, to automatically say they're the favorites in the National Football League, I don't understand that.
That's ridiculous, Don. Look, he is 39 years old. They have weapons on offense, all right?
Right.
The key is, you know, that they have a pretty good offensive line. So I said they have weapons on offense. But, again, when you're that age, when you hit the wall in sports, it comes tumbling down in a hurry. I mean, it's a calculated risk by the Jets. They were very impatient last year. They thought Zach Wilson would take another step and become a very good quarterback. Instead, he regressed. Maybe with Wilson watching Rodgers for a year or two, that he will develop into a good quarterback. But they feel as though, hey, we got to put all the chips in the middle of the table. We got to get the playoffs. Simple as that. And they feel as though Rodgers gives them the best opportunity. They build a pretty strong defense. They got a pretty good offense. So you have a veteran quarterback like Rodgers. Was it a lot? Yes. But if they get in the playoff and they make some noise, get to the, say, the AFC championship game, it's well worth it.
Yeah, and last year he did, in all honesty, he played with a broken thumb throughout most of the season. So it was tough to really give a fair evaluation of what happened in Green Bay. But, Roger, you're up.
Well, I have also heard that the Jets are now requiring to buy the next 2 years as a season ticket holder because of his acquisition. And, you know, people want to get on the bandwagon and get into MetLife Stadium now to see the Jets. I don't know whether you guys have heard anything about that or not, but I guess that's the story. And they want to sell season tickets, and they figure they have him for 2 years. And, you know, he probably will hopefully do for them will do what Tom Brady did for Tampa Bay and win a Super Bowl in the next couple of years. You know anything about that?
That really disgusts me. Don't these owners have enough money? They're just bleeding the public every which way. I'm sick and tired of it. I mean, the Jets have been downtrodden. Now, if he signs, they want season ticket holders to commit more money for a two-year period. You know, that's the thing that bothers me about sports today. How much money do these owners really need? They're billionaires. And I'll tell you this, I'm tired of owners in all sports, baseball, football, even basketball and hockey, asking the public to fund the stadium. They're billionaires. They can afford to fund their own stadium. I'll give them a break on the taxes. I'll give them a break on the land. But you're going to put your own money up. Phil Wrigley, Carl Shive, when they built Connie Mack Stadium, in Shive Park many years ago, they build it with private funds. It's time the public does not have to pay the freight any longer.
I agree.
Billy, you and I have gone around and around now over the last couple of years, not only in the National Football League, but baseball as well, and all sports in terms of gambling. Of course, major setback this week with not only NFL players being knocked out, college players being knocked out. Gambling is now becoming a major, major problem. I would suggest to you, because you use great guests on your show, if you can get a hold of Dave Whitley, W-H-I-T-L-E-Y, and he works for the USA Today, and he's from the Greenville Sun. He has a tremendous, tremendous column in today's paper about what's happening in the National Football League and the integrity of the game and the owners and, more importantly, the commissioner. I know he'd be a terrific, terrific guest on your show.
I'll try to get him. If you give me a contact number, I'll try to track him down, Don.
I don't have a number for him. I just read the column this afternoon, and I know he's a contributor on USA Today. He's also major columnist, you know, as far as the paper is concerned, but I don't have a telephone number for him. I'm going to see if we can get him on our show too, because a terrific column. He's in Gainesville. The Gainesville Sun is the name of the paper that he actually has a column in, but he's also the contributor to the USA Today.
Gainesville, Florida, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. They have opened up Pandora's box. It used to be a no-no. Oh, we can't gamble. We can't gamble. We can't gamble. Now they're in bed. They're at kiosks in every stadium. I think the Nationals already have it. It's just absurd. I am just waiting for a big-time player to be involved, a big-time, or a number of players to be involved. I want to see how the commissioners of the league handle it, all right? Because they welcomed gambling with open arms. Because guess what? It was more money for the owners.
More
right?
money.
You know how much they're getting now? $2 billion. He's got it in his column today. $2 billion. That's what their cut is.
All they worry about is money. They don't care about the integrity of the game. All right? So we're fooling ourselves if we think these owners and people that are in charge of franchises really worry about the integrity of the game. the integrity of the game went out the window a number of years ago when they welcomed the gambling element in.
One of the leading parts of his story is that you'd almost think that in 2012 when Roger Goodell wrote a court document, the National Football League cannot be compensated in damages for harm that sports gambling poses to the goodwill and character of the National Football League. That's what that was in 2012 before court. He wrote that letter saying that, and now look where we are.
Well, again, you think we really have a good commissioner in any of the sports?
No, we don't have any good commissioner.
Do you really believe that we have people that really think of the integrity of the game? Look, it'll be like WWF. We'll know what the outcome of the games are going to be eventually.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. Good
analogy. That's the problem. That's the problem.
Well, Bill, you know what you were also saying, which I totally agree with, how many owners really care about winning? Okay? Because they're going to get their money no matter what.
You're absolutely right. You know, like in baseball, you see certain clubs, there should be a floor as far as how much money you should spend every year. There's not that in baseball. There's that to a certain extent in football. But you're right. There's certain franchises. We went through it for 4 years in Philadelphia watching flop a la mode night in and night out with the Sixers, an inferior product. How many championships have they rung up in Philadelphia? Zero. The tankology did not work. And, you know,
if Josh Harris gets the Commanders, is he really in it to win championships or is an investment to make a lot of money? I think it's the latter, make a lot of money.
I think, absolutely. These guys, that's all they're thinking about is the bottom line. How much money can we make? The owners of yesteryear are long gone. The guys that thought about the goodness of the sport, look, they wanted to make money. But they certainly thought that, hey, we've got to have some integrity in our game.
Well, Billy, we followed the 76ers, you and I, for 50 years or maybe more than 50 years. They finally put together a team that really played very, very well in the first round of the playoffs. Now, of course, the Brooklyn Nets aren't a great team to beat, but they beat them in four straight. They played very, very well. Your thoughts, first of all, before we let you go, we jump over to the NBA, and what do you think of the Sixers going into round two?
If Embiid is healthy, they can go a long way. But that's the big question. Can he be healthy? Remember, they held him out of game four, and now he's had almost a week's worth of rest, and they'll ramp it up either against Atlanta or the Celtics. So we'll see where it goes. I mean, last night we thought the Celtics were going to cruise in, lock up the game, and then the Atlanta Hawks came roaring back and beat them.
Wire for a whisker, but you're right. I think they'd be much better off, though, getting the Hawks than they would be getting I don't think they want to play the Celtics.
But that's a great rivalry. That goes back to the old Warrior days in Philadelphia.
Right.
I mean, that's a great rivalry, and people will be jacked up for that. But I think it's all contingent upon the health of Embiid. Can he stay healthy throughout the playoffs? If he blows another tire, I mean, Paul Reed's a nice backup player, but hey, he's not Joel Embiid.
Mm-mm.
You know,
no,
that's
right.
Key.
He's head and shoulders the MVP, no question about it.
He should be the MVP, you're right, but they would always look at that, how many games did he miss? They always look at that, Don.
Yeah.
Always. And that's unfortunate.
Roger?
Well, they did the same thing with Jalen Hurts, you know, about the MVP. Because
he missed the MVP, missed the two games, and they gave him Patrick Mahomes. That's the way it worked. If you miss any time, look out.
You know, I'll tell you, Bill, I have kids that, you know, did you ask me in school, did you see Wilt Chamberlain play? I said I did. I saw him a lot. But Don and I, Frank, we saw him a lot. And I told him, I said, I saw him with my buddies sitting in Section N at Convention Hall, that first game and that he played against Bill Russell as a rookie. The first game was in Boston, but the second game was in Philly. And, you know, they can't believe, you know, some guys say, I don't believe he had 100 points. And, you know, you have to play Bill Campbell, you know, that recording. But they just, they can't, the kids can't believe a lot of stuff that you and Don and Frank have seen over the years.
But believe me,
in the NBA,
Will Chamberlain was the most dynamic player ever to suit up in the NBA. That includes LeBron. That includes Michael Jordan. Will Chamberlain could do anything he wanted on a basketball court. I became
right.
very good friends in San Diego with Alex Hannum. And I said, Alex, there was a game in Chicago that Wilt, the game before, he didn't score many points. There's a number of articles in the Philadelphia Bulletin, Daily News, Inquirer saying, has Wilt lost his touch to score? What happened in Chicago? He scored 66 points that night. So Wilt could do anything he wanted. They didn't keep block shots back in the day.
Billy, the biggest thing about Wilt was 1961-62, and this is in the column today, the same fellow I'm telling you about, the same fellow that David, it's in the paper today, he's got some of the things on odds and ends, and he's got a story on Wilt. 1961-62, you remember it well as I do. He missed 8 minutes in the entire season of minutes
yeah.
played in a game.
And
that
I'll
was because it was a technical, he was taken out of the game on a technical foul.
Let me say one thing about Will. There was no load management back in the day, all right? He played every night, averaged like 47 and a half minutes a night.
Right.
A night, every night. And they didn't have the luxury jets taking him from city to city, all right? They flew commercial. They had to go through airports and all that. But they didn't have the luxury these guys have today. How does Wilt play today? He would dominate this sport. There would be nobody. Who matched up with Wilt? Tell me.
He would own the sport. There's no question about it. Greatest player of all. They talk about Jordan. They can talk about all the players they want to talk about. They didn't see Wilt Chamberlain. Wilt Chamberlain was so far ahead of everybody else, it was unbelievable. Billy, thank you very, very much. You'll get together again soon. Always a pleasure to have you on. And we'll get back once they settle in on what the draft choices everybody picked. Why, we'll get together again and you give us a rundown of what you think.
Nice
and
job,
I look forward to you put me to
Billy, I always have you before you run off. I always have you give your intro to your show so that everybody that's listening here can hear you anywhere around the world. Give us your intro and we'll go to our next guest.
WCAT 1520 on the dial, 95.3 on the FM dial. WCAG1520.com, Facebook as well, and you always can follow me on Twitter, The Werndl, WERNDL. Thanks, Don and Roger. Talk to you
hey,
later.
Hey, Bill, take care.
Take care, hey, partner. Bill. Always the best. And now let me bring Roger back in because Ann Miller is waiting to join us. Really looking forward to this segment. It's something that I don't know very much about, but Roger has more knowledge than I do. So, Roger, get Ann on here for us.
Okay, Annie, it's a pleasure to have you with us, and we're going to really inform Don about girls flag football, okay?
Yes,
but,
I'm so excited.
Well, you should be, and she's very involved at the Hendricks Middle School as a math teacher and a coach, and now she's taken on a girls flag football. They've moved it down to middle schools. It's been at the high school and the college level, obviously. And tell us a little bit about the number of girls that signed up when you made the announcement.
I didn't know what to expect at first. I just was trying to get some interest. And at the interest meeting, we had 70 girls there for middle school girls flag football, which is just amazing.
Well, you know, I was we've had Chris Jensen on the past on the show, and I was at a softball game last night talking to him and his wife, and of course they have two girls at Hendricks, and
right.
Chris played at Missouri, and they really didn't know much about it. And, you know, I started breaking it down when you – because Kat Bennett said today she'd love to have 75 girls come out for basketball. But when you think about it, you got 11 on playing at one time. And with defense, if you really have a defense, you're going to have 22 players, you know, playing unless they, you know, double up. But just to give folks an idea, women's flag football finals weekend is going to be in Atlanta May 18th to 20th. And they now have NAIA teams. They have NCAA teams. And then they break it down by bracket so people can go online and see that. But what I want to talk about is, like, the high schools in Forsyth County have had girls flag football. Now it's going to the middle school. Talk about how popular it was with the high schools, and I assume that's why it's been moved to middle schools.
I 100% agree with you. I think the popularity of the last 4 years of girls flag football, I mean, West Forsyth has a championship under their belt. They won the state championship several years ago. And I think just the growing of that sport, it's time to start incorporating it into the middle school sector. So these girls are already prepared and they're ready to go when they are entering their freshman year and they're trying out to be on the girls' flag football team. That's what it's all about. We want them to be already invested and interested in the sport and understand the basic concepts before they
get. Well, let me ask you two questions, actually. What is the enrollment of women in the junior school that you're talking about that many people turned out for the team, number one? But number two, are people really aware that now, because of Title IX, all the universities are looking for more sports for women to balance out the program? And women, of course, have been talking for so many years now that there's not enough money dedicated to women, but now they're giving scholarships to flag football players for young ladies that play at the high school level. So give me two answers. One, what's the definition of your school for number of women with 75 coming out for the team? And number two, what do you think about the Title IX program where more scholarships are being given out for flag football and college football, or college football?
Absolutely. Well, the enrollment of our middle school is about 1,300 students.
Right.
So
okay.
It's a great number of having 75 girls, and that was just the rising 7th and 8th graders. That wasn't including our rising 6th graders that will also get a chance to play as well. So that meeting will be in a couple of weeks for them when they are visiting the middle school. So I'll be really excited to see what those numbers look like. But
right.
As far as and like getting scholarships and stuff, I think it's amazing. I know West Forsyth had their first athlete sign for college girls flag football, and she's going to a small school, Milligan College, up in Tennessee. And she was the first girl athlete to sign for flag football in Forsyth County for West Forsyth High School, which is just amazing.
Well, you know, the other thing is, Annie, and I told Don this, and also when I talked to Frank, you and I in Atlanta are very fortunate because they had flag football playoffs on public broadcasting, and I think also on Peachtree TV, just like they have Friday Night Football. So girls' high school flag football is getting first-class publicity, you know, and promotion through television, and obviously when the girls see that, the younger girls, that's going to get them interested, and they just keep on moving up the ladder.
Go ahead. 100% agree with you.
You know, Don, we know from recruiting, okay, and especially like in the NCAA, where do they want to go to big football schools? Where they're on TV, okay? They know there are going to be a lot of games on TV. I would say, and well, what did Annie? We had Teresa Grants on before the women's Final Four. And Don and I and Frank know her, and she used to be the women's coach at Rutgers and then went to Illinois. and was on the very first national championship women's team when it was not even the NCAA. But she made a statement at the end of the interview when she said, I hope in 20 years Title IX will not even be discussed or thought about. And I thought that was a good statement. And I think now with what you're doing and what the high schools, and is what I did want to ask, is every middle school in Forsyth going to have a team?
No, so we are going to be the first one. We're going to be starting it, seeing how the season goes, seeing how it works. And then hopefully I would love to see in 2 to 3 years almost every middle school in Forsyth County having a girls flag football team.
Who will you be playing? If you have the team and no other schools have teams yet, what will you be doing?
Most likely scrimmaging ourselves. It's going to be a big year of learning the game and just understanding we'll split the girls into two separate teams. And if I can possibly get like a one more scrimmage, I'm hoping that my husband, who is also a teacher in the county, will be able to possibly have a small team at his school and middle school as well, and practice with those athletes and see if we can get a game together so these girls can actually play against somebody else other than their teammates and their classmates in the building.
Roger.
Well, and there are, I'm sure, some middle school teams throughout the Atlanta area. Okay, so, you know, you may have an opportunity there. And then once it gets started and they see how well you've done with the turnout and, you know, it was funny. Chris said that Ava, who one gets, you know, gets out of eighth grade and goes to high school, I think Olivia and Ava, she'd be a great quarterback. So we're already talking about who's going to be playing for you, Annie, and you know what position they're going to be playing.
It's insane. I already have girls asking about what's the uniform T-shirt going to look like? What's going to be on it? What can we do? Like, how can we get this kind of bag? And I'm like, oh my gosh, we haven't even started practice yet. That's not until August, and we're already talking about what you want, and that's exciting to me. They are already becoming invested that they want to be involved. They see this program and they see what the high school is doing, that they're going to be attending. Majority of these students are going to be attending Westchester High School or Central or another school in the county, and they see how fast it's growing, and that gets me excited for the future of girls flag football.
Well, of course, the National Football League now, instead of having their all-star game at the end of the season where somebody could possibly get hurt, now they're working on flag football. So, you know, it's a growing, growing sport. I have to be very honest with you. I said to Roger when we talked about this, I've never seen a girls' flag football game. So my knowledge is zero, but I'll try to learn something from you, Ant.
You know, Don, the Hillsborough County – realize how cost effective a girls flag football team was. All you have to do is buy the belts and the shirts and a pair of shorts for the girls. Each and every high school now has it. Each and every middle school has it. And there is a semi-pro, if you will, team that plays on Sunday at Jefferson High School Field that play teams from all around the country.
Well, Annie, I'll tell you what I'm going to be bringing up tomorrow after what Frank said. You'll be taking a trip to Florida to play some games.
Well, I'm not sure we'll get that approved just yet, the middle school section, but maybe in the high school world we can get that approved.
Just blew the budget, Roger.
Listen, if they're talking about backpacks and everything else, and I had young Miss Faith today or yesterday, and I know she's trying out for you, but she is interested in every sport. There's no doubt about it. She just she's a gym rat, I guess, or field rat. But anyway.
Well, and most of these kids must really be football conscious. I mean, they must really have followed football and want to be a part of it, to be involved in flag football for women. I mean, they got to be football fans.
They're dog fans.
I agree with you there.
Yeah. And Don, it's only a little over an hour from Athens, okay? And they're dog fans. All you got to do is come into the school and see the jerseys. There was a funny story today. We've had David Berger on, Annie, and he was telling me about a girl had on. I saw her the other day. She had an Alabama shirt on, but her father didn't go to Alabama, and she wears it to antagonize him. So, yeah, you never know, right, Annie? You never know. Well, listen, great luck. Good luck with it. We were with great success, and you know, I know you're going to do a great job. You know what I think about you, not only as a teacher but a coach, and the whole school. I think it just says how wonderful the school is. I'm one of the biggest proponents of it, and what they do. And I think for you and the school to be the origin of the first of middle schools in Forsyth County to make this endeavor. I know my daughter is a high school girls basketball coach. She said to me one time, she said, "I wish I had played football instead of soccer." And I said, "I don't." So, you know, but.
Well, Annie, first of all, I congratulate you because you're a forerunner in the sport, and especially in your school system. So as Roger said, I really congratulate you, wish you the best of luck. And I know Roger will keep us informed, and as you get the team to assemble and get it started, we'll have a chance to talk to you again, and you can tell us the pluses and the minuses and the difficulty of getting it started.
Yes, awesome. Thank you all so much for having me.
Go Hawks. Take care, Annie. Thanks so much. Best to your parents. Okay.
Thank you.
Don, I got to tell you, her parents are a treasure. And they have only missed, I think West High School opened in 07. They have only missed one football game since it opened. And that was only because of her wedding. That's fans. That is true high school fans.
Well, before Mike comes on, the New York Knicks are up 74-63 over Cleveland. Playing in Cleveland, the Knicks win the night they close out. The Sixers already closed out their series in four against the Brooklyn Nets. So those two teams will be moving on. Jalen Brunson's having another big, big game for the Knicks. Of course, we follow him very closely because his dad played for Temple. And we did their games for so many years, 17 years. So glad to see him doing very, very well as well.
Yeah, Bruins and Florida are tied at one. They just showed Robert Kraft sitting out in the stands at the Garden with the fans. And then the Phillies were up 2-0. Last I saw, they're down 5-2. And the culprit there was a former Philly, who I guess if they hadn't let him go, he would have been the shortstop for a long time. J.P. Crawford, he hit a grand slam home run. So
the Phillies have been struggling, Roger. You know that as well as I do. And every time we expect them to get back on a little bit of a run for Robbie, they just haven't been able to do it. The pitching hadn't been able to hold up. The Mets are in the same situation, although they're going to slowly get their pitchers back, so we'll see what happens there. The Yankees finally won a game against the Mets. I think it was 10-5. I forget the final score, but I think it was 10-5. I know they won big. And so baseball starting to level off, but not necessarily the teams you would expect. Baltimore's gotten off to a great start. Pittsburgh's playing very well. They lost a tough game last night to the Dodgers. They were well ahead and then lost it. I think final score was 8-7. And but I think the Knicks are going to close out Cleveland and Cleveland to go to the next round. So a lot of sports going on right now between hockey, basketball, baseball, and of course we first two segments of the show we talked about the National Football League and the draft coming up tomorrow night. I don't know if we solved any problems, Roger, but maybe Frank's got an idea or two of a player he thinks the Eagles may take or somebody else may take. Frank, you got a secret weapon out there that you think's going to come up?
No, I don't, Don. The boys were talking about, you know, my grandsons do a program on Tuesday night, and they were talking about it, and even they were saying there was a kid who's 6'7" coming out of Georgia. I forget what the hell position he plays now, but they said that Sirianni was very high on him, and they thought maybe he would get a shot, but I can't remember the name. But,
well, I thought it was very interesting that we were talking about that they were convinced that maybe they were going to take that big tackle out of Georgia. Well, we'll see what tackle, defensive end, whichever you want to call him.
Right.
And Roger, you saw him play a lot, Carter, and we'll see what happens. I don't know.
Well, the Phillies are now down 5-4. No, he's good. I mean, he's great. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, you have to question a lot of his decisions, okay? And I'll tell you, Frank, there is a kid coming out of Denmark High School, and maybe, your grandson, I guess that was Brady that does the show, right?
No, it's all four of them. Yeah, they all do.
All four of them. Okay. Well,
yeah.
One kid that is 6'7", 295 out of Denmark High School, he's all state. He's going to Tennessee. I don't know who they might be alluding to as far as going in the draft. But, no, Carter's a tremendous player. I mean,
Billy Wardell said, Roseman had him in, and he had long discussions and talked about all the pluses and minuses and so forth. And Billy knows it more than we do. He's much closer to the situation. But it seems like Howie was very impressed with him and his answers.
Well, he made some picks several years ago. And everybody was very high on him, and they really were flops. But in recent years, he's been really terrific, and he goes for special players, that especially in the Southeastern Conference. And I think we all have to admit that that's the best conference in the country. Strongest.
No question.
And
Mike Zimczak is ready to go now, and Roger always asks you the first question about the TV situation with Washington. Well, it was a little bit of a decision made in the New York courts yesterday. So, Mike Zimczak, before we talk about your favorite sport, soccer, give us an update on what this means now to the Washington franchise and the TV settlement.
All right, so I got to admit I'm driving, so I hope you all can hear me.
We got
you. Sound good. Yep.
All right. Yes, in New York courts, the Washington Nationals were awarded $100 million yesterday for the TV rights in between 2012 and 2016. So this goes back to the massing issues that we've been talking about for many, many months. Whether or not they're going to get that money right now, or if the Orioles are going to appeal and drag it out longer, that remains to be seen. But, yes, they were awarded $100 million yesterday for the rights for 2012 to 2016.
So
not necessarily a surprise. I from what I read, they anticipated, or the people that were obviously arguing the case from a legal standpoint, they felt they had every right to be positive, and it looks like they were correct.
Well, there's no reason to think that the Nats don't deserve this. The deal that was cooked up in between Peter Angelos and Bugs Seeley is basically unprecedented, and we have talked about that a number of times. You know, how can a franchise own another franchise's television rights in perpetuity? And the fact that they haven't been able, without the courts, to come to an agreement tells us just how ironclad that agreement really, really was.
Right. Roger?
Well, yeah, that's what's really surprising. And, you know, Mike, what's your gut feeling? Will, do you think the Orioles will appeal this decision?
I think the Orioles will appeal the decision just because that's what they're going to do. Do I think that the award was correct? Yes, and probably then some. But the Orioles are going to appeal this decision. They're going to use every single avenue that they have to delay this decision.
Let me ask you this. How does it affect Washington's sale of the club then?
It gives any prospective buyer a little bit of optimism to say, like, okay, these TV rights deals are going to break a little bit in my favor in the future, but not much. At some point in time, Major League Baseball or somebody needs to come and clarify or in some way how this contract is going to be work. The fact that the O's own so much of the Nationals' broadcast rights. And again, the way this was set up when Bud Selig and Peter Angelos set it up is in perpetuity. And what we've come to learn is not only does it include the over-the-air rights, we believe it also includes the streaming rights. Somehow,
and that's big. That's big.
Yes. Somehow, Rob Manfred has to break this because the Nats.
I think we're going to wait a long time for that.
Yeah, the Nats need to have whoever's going to buy the Nats needs to know that they have some concrete revenue from TV coming in. And right now, all they know is whatever revenue that we have is going to be decided by the Baltimore Orioles, and all of that could be tied up in court for 10 years. Like, we just got a ruling on television rights from 10 years ago.
Hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Well, okay, we got as much as we could do with that one. So let's get to your favorite sport, soccer, and MLS. We'll start there first because they're starting to move along now. What, they got 5 weeks in? Your thoughts there first.
Well, number one, the Philadelphia Union finally got it together. They beat Toronto FC 4-2 on the weekend. Here come the Union. Again, Roger, your Atlanta United looking really, really good. I would say the surprise package of the year is still the expansion St. Louis team. They're really doing well, and it's not like they were built kind of like Atlanta United was. They did not lay out all of that money and stuff. So to see them where they are right now, a bit of a surprise. I'd like to see them continue to do this. But I think it's going to tail off as the year goes on.
Yeah, the United are up 1-0 over Memphis right now in the second half. So that looks like a perfect.
What you're watching right now is the the USA Open Cup. It's the Lamar Hunt Trophy. It's anybody who has a team can enter into this cup and get games. We've gotten to the third round. That is where the lowest ranked 18 teams from MLS come in. So, yeah, you have Atlanta United playing against Memphis. There are some other interesting geographical teams playing. I believe DC United is playing against a team from an amateur team from Baltimore. It's a lot of fun to watch this round because you have a lot of amateur teams that are playing against MLS teams. And anytime you can get a little bit of an upset, it's fun to watch.
I'll tell you, talk about the Amish, just to switch gears for a second. That doesn't have anything to do with Mike Simzak, really, but for folks that follow golf, we talk about it. Doug's going to be on with us the next half hour. The young man Bennett that did so well in the Masters tournament finished 16th in the competition. Was remarkable. He was right up in the top 10 through the first three rounds and then blew up a little bit in the fourth round. But in the conference championships now, he finished 16th. If you can believe that, he finished 16th in the conference championships, and he finished 16th in the Masters. So quite a more remarkable conference as far as golf is concerned, I guess, if he fell all the way down to 16th after finishing in the Masters. But I'll tell you what, you got the amateurs playing against the pros sometimes, Mike. Not that easy.
It's not that easy, and it's a lot of fun. I do want to mention this as far as soccer goes. I don't know if you all have been, but I know a lot of our listeners have. The series on Hulu, Welcome to Wrexham, which is the soccer team that was bought by Rob McElhenney and the guy from Deadpool. They got promoted into the professional ranks in the English Premier League. It is a small team from North Wales. They've been out of the professional divisions for 18 years. And so this has been an extremely big thing for them, not only in terms of where the soccer club is playing,
right,
but even in tourism. This club has sold out of all their inventory of jerseys, home, away, alternates. They had a great run in the FA Cup. Ostensibly, they should be a little bit profitable this year, even though they're not playing professional. So they're going to move back into League Two, the bottom tier of the English professional system next year. But pay attention to this. It's a great story. So many people have been watching this team and come to love them. It's great watch. It's great follow. And I'm waiting to see how the next season covers this season that is going on right now.
Roger?
Mike, wanted to get back to soccer. The Union now 3-4. Wins and losses, but do you see them turning it around? Is it an issue like we see so many times with championship teams, where the Phillies, for instance, having trouble getting started after losing the World Series, and we see that often. Is that an issue for the Union, do you think?
I actually do. They came out last weekend. Again, I said they won 4-2 over Toronto. And it's the first time all season I've seen the Union really look like the Union that I knew. There have been some games, tournament games and things like that they've had to grow into. They're going to have to go into the CONCACAF Champions League semifinals in the next week. They had to get over. Let's be honest, gentlemen. That final that they lost to LAFC last October is one of the epic games, not only in MLS, but it's one of the epic cup finals in any league at any point ever. And they were on the losing side of it, and that takes a lot out of you. So that it took them a little bit of time to get back into this, I can understand that. Now what I'm starting to see, I hope, based on the performance last week, is they're starting to get into gear, and we're going to see them push on from here and make a run at another playoff run and something where they should be. Because this is a team that should be, again, competing to get to the point where they were at last year.
Another update, the Astros beat the Rays tonight, 1-0. Rays only got a couple of base hits. Astros had five, but they won it by a score of 1-0. Roger?
Yeah, you know, Mike, we just had a woman on that's going to be the coach of, and I know you're a educator, and I was wondering, at your school, do they have girls flag football?
No. But,
okay.
I teach middle school, and we have, in our conference, a limited number of sports that they play.
Okay. Because Hendricks, where I sub, that's going to be the first one in Forsyth County. But I was just doing some more research, and you probably have seen this in Baltimore and Washington with the NFL teams. The Eagles today, or the other day, I guess, whatever, they put out an announcement that girls flag football is the fastest growing sport in the country. And I found that I just wanted to bring it up to you because the Falcons are having a huge next month flag football extravaganza in Atlanta at various venues and then to Mercedes-Benz Stadium. The Eagles have done the same thing, and they have, I guess, one coming up. So obviously we are on the cusp of a new phenomena in sports, and maybe in the next couple of years we'll all be talking about who beat who, like we've done with the MLS in a number of years. But I can remember when we first started talking about soccer, the MLS was not that popular, nothing like it is today. And it just takes some time. But I wanted to find out whether, since I knew you were involved in education, whether it was up there. So it is, but it's not obviously at your school.
Two different things. Do I think that is flag football for girls is going to become a thing? A growing thing over the next couple of years, especially in middle and high schools? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that is going to become an increasing thing, and we're going to see more of it. It will really hit home when and if it becomes an Olympic sport. That'll really become something.
Well,
until
that'll
then,
take years, but
yeah.
I agree with you. Yeah.
No, we're going to see that. As far as the growth of the MLS since we started, yeah. You know, it has become a bigger and better league. And the funny thing, since I started talking to you guys almost 10 years ago, has been how they have figured out where MLS fits. When we started talking about 10 years ago, it was, we're going to get the biggest name European players. We're going to get the Beckhams. We're going to get the Zlatan Ibrahimovic's. We're going to get them over. and that's going to be what the league is. What I've seen since then is, and Roger, Atlanta United has been a big one in this respect. We're going to go and we're going to find some young talent from South and Central America. We're going to bring them in, and we're going to introduce you to them before they get great, and we'll sell them and make a profit. And then you have teams like the Union, where we're going to get kids, and we're going to develop them, and we're going to make them great, like Brendan Aaronson, who was on the U.S. men's team for the World Cup. And then we'll sell them on. But you'll know us because we originated it. Oh, and by the way, we're going to put this stipulation or any clause that he signs for any transfer. We're going to make 5% of that. So the Union will collect a little bit of money on all the moves that Brendan Aaronson makes. So 1-5%, you know, they're going to get some money off of that, which they can use to invest in new players. So I love what the U.S., what the MLS has become. We understand, like, it's not going to be the Premier League. It's not going to be La Liga. It's not going to be Ligue 1 in France. But what we are going to see is domestic players or hometown teams that we can all get behind. And we're going to see some of the players that could be future national team players for the U.S., for Jamaica, for Guatemala, for El Salvador, for Canada, and guys that, when we get to the next World Cup, these are names that we're going to know.
Well, Mike, that's why Arthur Blank is so smart, where he built the United Complex. It's in more of an area that's Latino. So, you know, you're there with the folks, you know, with the fandom. You know, whereas if he probably had the ground, he could do it in Flowery Branch. But this is well on the other side of Atlanta, and I think it really is one of the factors in drawing the Latin American, South American fans to the stadium.
Well, it's beyond that for Atlanta. You would not have turnout for teams, for Atlanta United, if you just marketed to the Latin American crowd in Atlanta. He's been able to put not only a team that gets young South American players that gets that element together, but just young American players.
Right.
What Arthur Blank has done in a lot of respects has been great, and it has transformed how a lot of MLS teams look at team building.
Well, Mike, I think a couple of things, and we got to jump. Doug's ready to go. We'll tell you this, that the Panthers right now lead 2-1 over the Bruins. They're going into the third period, and right now your Washington team tied up with the Mets at 2-2, so you probably have more information on that being in Washington than we do. But the other thing is that I think what we talked about the flag football is that I think it's also going to give the colleges more opportunity to split Title IX money. They're always looking for avenues to bring more women into athletics to utilize the Title IX disparity between the money that the men get and the money that the women get. So I think this is going to be another opportunity for the universities to give out scholarships for flag football for the women. So that's only my opinion. We'll see what happens. Mike? Thank
no,
you
you're right,
very much for another interesting night.
Have a great
well,
week, Mike.
I do want to ask Doug one question.
Go ahead.
Well, I know I can talk to him. Doug, What do you think that the Ravens are going to do tomorrow night in the draft?
I've heard conflicting information, and I don't know whether it's, you know, dum-dums in the media that want to try to create a story, but there was one today that said that if Bijan Robinson starts to tumble a little bit, that the Ravens are inclined to move up the board to get him. In my heart of hearts, what I can tell you is that Eric DaCosta is frothing at the mouth because he only has 5 draft picks. So I'm guessing if he can find a trade partner for 22, he's going to move back from 22 to, you know, early 30s, pick up another second rounder and maybe something else and try to create some value in that top of second, middle second, third round, you know, area. Yeah, I don't really forecast the Ravens making a splash move, but, you know, they signed Odell Beckham. They traded for Roquan Smith. So, I mean, it's not out of the realm, but they typically like to have a lot of draft capital on draft night, and they typically have a lot of compensatory. I mean, they had, I think, 6 fourth rounders last year. They only have 5 total picks this year. So my guess is he moves backwards.
Doug, one other one. The Odell Beckham move, the Roquan Smith move, they tell me we're trying to make Lamar feel comfortable. Is there any chance that there's any movement with Lamar?
Yeah. Well,
at any point in the next couple of days?
I think collectively Ravens fans will breathe a sigh of relief once we get past, I think, the 4th pick tomorrow. You know, because the Colts were one of those kind of iffies on, you know, do we want to try to do something with Lamar or not? You know, the Odell Beckham, you know, they say that Lamar recruited him. You know, clearly they're trying to build a better receiver room. They're trying to build a better team for him. They signed his, I think, was it his cousin, Trayvon Mullen, or whatever his name is. You know, I think they're doing what they can to keep him. Now, the word here is, you know, Josina Anderson, I think, is Lamar's best buddy. Apparently they have conversations or whatever, but it kind of sounds to me like once we get past tomorrow that I think some version of deal is imminent with the Ravens and Lamar Jackson. Now, my guess is at 26 years old, the Ravens are going to basically say, here's a 3-year, whatever, $150 million, a fully guaranteed deal. And they'll do something like that. I think it's going to be less than what he wants, and I think it's only going to be for 2 or 3 years, maybe 4, I don't know. But I think they're going to guarantee, my guess is they guarantee him 3 full years.
And last question for you, Doug. Me and my wife want to go out for dinner with you all again, so shout me a holla, and let's
got
get
it.
That to happen. Love you, brother.
Well,
talk to you later.
You got it. Thank you.
Okay, take care, Mike.
Week.
Thank you very much, and Devils and Rangers now tied. They'll play tomorrow night, tied at 2-2, so that's going to be a very interesting playoff series in the National Hockey League, almost an intercity rivalry, I'll tell you that, for the Islanders, the Rangers, and the Devils all getting into the playoffs, quite a tribute to the New York area. Mm-hmm. Doug, let's get back down, we talk about your Baltimore Orioles. They lost a tough one last night, but they got one under their wing tonight.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, the Tampa Bay Rays are playing some really good baseball right out of the chute. And, you know, the Orioles haven't matched them quite step for step, but they're about, what, 4 or so games behind them in the win-loss column. And
they lost,
I think,
tonight 1-0, a real tough game tonight. They lost to Houston.
Well, I mean, Tampa has some really solid pitching. Obviously, they've hit a lot of home runs as well. You know, Baltimore's played some pretty scrappy, you know, baseball, and I think that the second half of last year, I mean, they seemingly are never really out of a game. Even last night when they lost, it was 8-1 going into the ninth, and they find 5 runs there with a grand slam and a solo home run by Gunnar Henderson. So, you know, I was just watching the replay. I missed the game today, but I was watching the replay of it, and, you know, they are just a pretty solid team. They're pretty scrappy. I mean, Tyler Wells has pitched well in spurts, their pitching. And I was just having this discussion with my wife, like, you know, Michael Givens and Dylan Tate are two big pieces of their bullpen that have been injured and haven't had a chance to. I mean, they're kind of starting some rehab assignments, and when they come back, what will that look like in the bullpen? I mean, who has to go down or who has to be released? You know, looking at their offense, there's a lot of players that have struggled, and one of them is Gunnar Henderson. You know, he plays an integral part. I mean, Adam Frazier has played well in spurts, but he's only hitting like 200s.
Right.
I'm not a big fan of Taren Vavra. I think he's taking away at bats from, you know, somebody who's in the minor leagues who's probably ready. I'm not going to put it past the Orioles as we continue to march towards the All-Star break or even thereafter before the trade deadline to make some kind of a big move with getting a frontline starting pitcher. I think they're just one or two players really away. I mean, John Means coming back from Tommy John is going to be a help. They're starting pitching. I mean, there's too many people for not enough spots is kind of how I see it. So I feel like at some point in time, they're going to have to reduce those numbers and clean that up by trading a couple players for someone of relevance to potentially put them over the heap here. You know, so it seems like watching them play on any given night, you've got two or three players that play really well, one or two that play okay offensively, and that seems to carry them because you look at some of their averages and they're low 200s, mid 200s, and, you know, they just find a way to score runs. So hopefully they can sustain that. You know, CNL Perez had a great year last year. He hasn't looked very good, and it's very easy when I watch the games to see what Brandon Hyde thinks of the guys that he brings in, particularly in those leverage situations and how that's flipped to the guys he trusts versus maybe that was different last year. So it's really fun for me to watch them. I watch every game I can, which is mostly every night at some point. So it's good stuff for me.
Roger?
Well, they're going to be in Atlanta next week for a series, and I think that'll be a good telling tale.
Sure.
On exactly, you know, how good they are.
Well, that's been the knock if you listen to, we'll say it, the non-Baltimore area about the Orioles. You know, they say, well, you know, they took a series from Detroit. They swept a two-game series with the Nats. They took the series from the A's. You know, these are all not very good teams that they're beating. So really, who are they? And I'm like, okay, well, you know, that's like saying that Gonzaga stinks because they beat up on all the teams in their division. Well, that's what they were supposed to do, right? So, you know, to your point, I think Atlanta's a quality baseball team, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, how they fare against some pretty good pitching and a little bit better caliber of baseball.
Doug, they said the exact same thing about the Rays. You know, the Rays played all the lesser teams. That's how they got off to that 13-0 start and that.
Sure.
And, 15 out of 17 at home.
And they're still winning.
You got to win. You got it. Larry Bird was all of this 2 weeks ago, and as he said, the Phillies went out to Colorado. They lost the first game right out of the chute. They did come back and win the next ones, but they lost it. They lost the first one. And as he said, you got to beat the teams you're supposed to beat. And that's exactly
what
the Orioles are doing.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, Don, you know, the difference in the schedule from last year to this year regarding the teams that you play within division has significantly decreased.
Absolutely.
You know, so they've already played six games with the Red split 3-3. So, you know, I mean, you start looking outside of their division and other teams. I mean, who would have thought that the Arizona Diamondbacks, who were god-awful horrific last year, the Orioles in the AL East, I think if you look at all the other divisions, would likely be in first place in like all of them but one, their own in another one. So, you know, I mean, time will tell with how the season plays out, you know, in terms of the consistency of their bullpen, the consistency of their starting pitching, the consistency of their hitting, injuries, whether they decide to bring up some of their young players and give them a shot at it. So there's a lot to be played on diamond, and we'll see what happens come, you know, game 162.
Roger?
Well, you're exactly right. And do you think when you talk about starting pitching, but they've got too many players and not enough spots, is it too many pitchers that they have, in your opinion, or not?
Well, yes, and I'll tell you, you know, I think Grayson's here to stay. You know, Kyle Gibson's 4-0. I just watched Tyler Wells pitch. He's thrown great this year. I mean, his ERA is under 3. So there's 3 pieces of your 5. And then right now you've got Dean Kramer and Kyle Bradish, who are basically the flip of a coin as to when they go out. Are they going to pitch well or are they not? My question is, how long is it going to take John Means to get ready after his, you know, cleared and then rehab assignments? And when he comes back, is he on a pitch count? Do they send somebody else down the bullpen? As I mentioned, you've got Dylan Tate, who was one of Brandon Hyde's favorites last year, and then they went out and signed Michael Gibbons, former Oriole, who went away and now has come back. You know, so I think Austin Both played a pretty good role for them last year as a swing man. I think he's the man out there, in addition to maybe one other person in that bullpen. So, I mean, you know, look, they're stretching DL Hall out at AAA. They, you know, he's a top prospect. They want him to obviously continue, you know, his growth as a pitcher, as a starter. They traded for Cole Irvin, who they sent down to AAA, who we'd like to think would play an integral role moving forward, you know, as somebody that they actually traded for that they thought was going to anchor their rotation. So there's 3 more guys in Means, Irvin, and DL Hall that could play a role in their starting pitching. So who's coming, who's going? You know,
yeah.
I guess it's a good problem to have, but they'll have to, you know, solidify that.
Well, you know,
I did mention at the top of the show our PGA professional, Doug Hamilton. We talk football, we talk baseball, but we don't talk golf much right now. But I brought up in the last segment to Mike, and I was a little surprised the conference championship, Bennett, who played so well in the Masters, the young man who was in the top 10 for right until the fourth day, finished 16th overall, and in the conference championship, if you can believe it, finished 16th against his amateur competition playing at Tennessee. So you never can tell, can you?
Well, I mean, look, golf is such a pure sport because it's you against you. It's you against the golf course. You know, we've talked about how much competition there is on a week-in, week-out basis with guys that might be playing well or seemingly put, you know, 3 or 4 good rounds together to, you know, shoot up the leaderboard. So it's hard to predict. You know, it's kind of like, you know, obviously you guys have paid attention to horse racing over the course of time, and, you know, you get all the horses in the gate and they give you the odds, and I'll be damned if sometimes somebody wins that's not supposed to, right? So it just happens that way. And, you know, that was great for that young man to put together such a great tournament. I'm sure he'll have some incredible memories, you know, for the rest of his life.
Absolutely.
Based on how he performed there. And that's a wonderful story. But, you know, those, like I said, I mean, the other horses that get to the gate don't care if you're the odds-on favorite. They're just going to go, right? So, you know, the rest of those guys playing golf are there to play and compete and win. And you know, I think that's good news for the sport of golf in general, in terms of how healthy it is at all levels, where you have all these, you know, different competitions that you see so many good young players. And, you know, we see it all the way up through the tour. And you know, now you have a secondary tour with LIV Golf that has some really reputable players, obviously, that are doing very well. And that's good for the health of the game. I mean, it's such a growing sport, probably not quite as much as, like, pickleball or something like that right now. But, you know, everybody's playing it. You know, everybody's playing it.
Well, you and I have talked over the years, I think, from my standpoint, that of all sports that I've ever followed, I think in golf right now, the competition, you can go down 200 down the list, and they still would have a chance to win a Masters necessarily, but they still would have a chance to win a tournament, a PGA tournament, any weekend. I mean, there's just so many great players. Roger, you're up.
Well, I was wondering, I mean, that's amazing if, you know, with all the great golfers that we've seen in the past as a group, and then for you fellows to feel that way. I did want to get back to Doug just for a second on baseball. You said that Kyle Gibson is 4-0, and well, the Phillies could have kept him. Number one, they could have kept Zach Eflin. I forget how he's doing. And then they kept Bailey Falter, and Bailey Falter is 0-4, okay, and has all kinds of trouble not having home runs hit against them. Mm-hmm. The Phillies did just tie up the game with the Mariners, and they still have two on with nobody out in the bottom of the eighth, so there's some hope.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the thing I see about the Orioles is they seem to be very consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not up one night, down the other, vice versa. They just
mm-hmm.
They have a good record, obviously, but they
yeah.
are very consistent, and they drive in runs. The Phillies are not
yeah.
driving in runs. Am I
well,
right about that with the O's?
Yeah, we were talking about that sitting here on the couch, you know, looking at a player like Ramon Urias, who, you know, he's hitting, I don't know what he's hitting, somewhere between 200 and 250, whatever he's hitting, but seemingly he's come up with some very big hits with men on base, and that clutch effect that they have, you know, to drive in runs with two outs, or to somebody come up and get the big hit, or somebody that has a really tough at-bat that fights off pitches that gets a walk and then steals second and then, you know, goes to third on a ground ball or whatever. They seemingly just figure a way that they're really never out of the game. And, you know, Roger, to your point, you know, with the Kyle Gibson, you know, there's a part of me that, the nerd part of me that likes this whole analytics, you know, BS about baseball and sports in general. But then, you know, the other part of me says, man, just, you know, just go for it or don't go for it. Like, I don't need a piece of paper to tell me what to do or percentages or, you know, all that kind of crap. So a guy like Kyle Gibson, you know, has historically pitched well at Camden Yards, and he's a sinker ball pitcher. And, you know, the Orioles probably did some version of analytical voodoo or whatever to figure out, like, all right, look, man, he's worth 10 mil or whatever he's worth, to see if we can come in here and he can throw some ground balls and keep the ball in the yard. And, you know, for right now, I mean, it looks like it's a good deal. You know, I mean, look at, you know, we probably all either read the book or seen the movie of Moneyball and how much of a, you know, mess that team was when Billy Bean was putting that together, and you know, they did well, you know. So, I mean, where does it all stop with, you know, who do we go sign, or who do we go draft, or who do we go promote, or, you know, from the minor leagues, or all these different things. And there's some nerd behind a computer that's running some algorithm that says, oh, yeah, man, call this guy up. It's a Tuesday, and it's, you know, the ambient temperature is this. Like, he's going to get three hits. So I don't know how that works, but, you know, that's what it is.
Well, I think the Rays are certainly a perfect example of that. They, for years, you know, worked on pitching and defense. Did not score many runs. This is unusual. They didn't have a lot of home runs this year, but
right.
they do exactly the same thing you're talking about that Baltimore does. They, when they get a guy on base, they get him around and they get him in. And
yeah.
that's their
but
formula
look
to
at
win.
The pitching. Look at the pitching, Don, of the Tampa Bay Rays, like the guys that they've developed. Either they've been cast-offs or free agents or people that shouldn't be there, or people
right.
that they drafted that they said, why did you draft him? That they, you know, the Orioles were talking about the guy they got from Minnesota in the Jorge Lopez trade, Yonair Cano or whatever that guy's name, and he hasn't even given up a run yet this year.
Right.
And they said
right.
that what they did was they changed his posture when he throws the ball, which allows the ball to sink more. And I'll be damned, that guy's throwing like 95 with like movement. I mean, you know. That's the really cool part for me, like when you
their
give a guy a golf
lesson.
Their pitching
coach done a great job. You're right.
Yeah, yeah that's
give,
a great
you give a guy
pitching
a golf
coach
lesson.
Is right.
Sure. You
Bruins just scored again. It's 2-2 now.
It's
the Bruins are tied with the Panthers.
Yeah, Phillies are up 6-5. Go ahead, Doug. No, Doug, your point, and Don's right.
Yeah.
And that is a great pitching coach job.
Sure. But look at the hitting coaches. It's the same thing. I mean, they take videos of guys that hit, then they watch them frame by frame and say, you know, you're doing this, or your left foot's doing this, or if we changed our grip, or if we held the bat higher, or if we did this, you know, you could keep the barrel flatter longer through the, you know, Austin Hayes did that in the off season, and it's paid its dividends already thus far. I mean, you know, pitching's the same way. When you start looking at the mechanics of people and when their foot hits and how they hold the ball and can we do this and my arm angle and my shoulder and my glove and all these different things. I mean, to me, that's a really, really cool part about making a really good chocolate chip cookie that comes out of the oven that you just want to eat like 10 of. You know what I mean?
But Doug, that's a great comparison to your sport. I mean, when you take somebody, you don't make major changes. You make changes that you think that the person you're teaching can understand and compensate.
Sure. Well, and that's part of my philosophy in teaching golf is I do a couple things that I have you walk through kind of to analyze how you hold the club and how your arms move. And my theory is your body wants to move in a certain way, and I want you to show me how that is because I want to unlock that so you can continually do it because my guess is that you're doing something in your swing that prevents that. And if I can unlock that, then you're going to play better. So that's the cool part.
And that's basically the same thing you're talking about with pitching and catching and hitting.
Yes, yes, 100%. That's what those guys do. That's
Rob,
what those
know
guys get paid to do.
You guys are exactly right. And what's really sad, I look at Scott Kingery's stats at Lehigh Valley every day. I mean, he's still, you know, getting paid by the
Rory phone. Just went up 3-2, boys. Go ahead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I look at how they ruined that kid, you know, not only playing him at all those positions, but that's mm-hmm. when Kabler was the manager to go try to hit home runs. And they, unfortunately, a couple of guys came back, but that poor young man was ruined.
Roger, that's the change that you'll see prevalent in baseball is now they talk about exit velocity, they talk about launch angle, and they talk about these metrics that are more relative to golf, I think, than baseball. But, you know, everybody now is wanting to hit up on the ball so they can hit home runs as opposed to keeping the bat in the zone, you know, barreled longer so that they can drive the ball in the gaps and potentially still hit home runs. But we used to create backspin by hitting down on the ball. Now they create it by hitting up on the ball, yet they leave this huge gaping hole somewhere in the strike zone, which leads to a lot more strikeouts.
Well, boys, we're going to have to hold it right there. Our Commander-in-Chief, Frank Carroll, tells us our time is up. Once again, thank you very much, Doug. We'll talk with you next week.
Yep.
Thanks to all our
guests.
Have a great week, Doug. We'll talk about the draft next week and how everybody made out. Frank, take it over.
Take care. Have a great week. Thanks, Frank. Take care, as always. God bless.
Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, please acknowledge and let them know you know they're there. Very important to those in uniform now. Not everybody out there in uniform is a bad guy. These programs are dedicated to those who lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hammer, Sergeant Tom Wilson, Charlie County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman Charlie Tonnet, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant James O'Connor, Philadelphia Police Department, Sergeant Chris LeVay, Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman and Officer Christman, Lakeland PD, Lieutenant Joe Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Deputy Josh Meyer, Nassau County Sheriff's Department, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Artis Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Fikas, Wilmington Fire Department, Trooper Joe Bullock, Florida Highway Patrol, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Chief Al Hogan, Longwood P Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Deputy Mike Hargrove, Pinellas County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Blaine Lane, Polk County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Chris Meyer, Polk County Sheriff's Department, and Sergeant Christopher Fitzgerald, Philadelphia Sheriff's Department, and the Temple University Police Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Till that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rain fall softly on your fields. The sunshine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your family always in the palm of his hands. Good night. God bless. Have a great week.
Shema lekma yelama. Shema hezahilma. Sona shene voratfet. Hakuig again mae.
Shema lekma yelama, shema lezahilma.
chevalier, a high-born scion of gentle mien, a fiery blade engaged to lead. He'd break the bravest in the field. Spirit and with mind aflame, saw wish and strength and length of days.
All units be advised, 1999 has responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul and all the souls of the faithful departed.